Now, Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
Good morning. Welcome to the program. Adam Sterling with you once again on CFAX 1070. This is August 13th of the year 2020. Lots to talk about on the show today. As always, it is a Thursday, which means during the second half of our second hour, as always, we will be speaking with Michael Mulligan of Mulligan Defense Lawyers, taking a look at the latest news in the legal affairs section of the program, Legally Speaking. Do this every Thursday. Also going to be chatting later on this hour with Sean Cahill. He's a board member of the North Park Neighborhood Association. You've heard a number of news stories expressing concerns about nearby residents reporting a tent city. Now, there have been some tents, at least as far as I know, in the Central Park area just off Quadra Street for quite some time. But like many other tent encampments in the Victoria area, the number of tents at that location has been growing as the pandemic for COVID-19 drags on. And as we have unfortunately seen in any number of other circumstances, namely on Pandora Boulevard, on the middle there, as well as Topaz Park, rather notorious, as well as Beacon Hill Park, now the North Park Neighborhood Association saying they are also being affected by increased instances of crime and disorder. Speaking with Sean Cahill coming up later on in the program. Speaking of Beacon Hill Park, I'm continuing to track those two petitions. We'll get to those results in just a moment. After the break that's coming up in just a few moments from now, I have invited the executive director of the Community Social Planning Council of Greater Victoria onto the show to talk about the recent point-in-time count. Funny thing happened to me yesterday. I was sort of getting ready for the show. It was at 8:31 it happened, and my phone buzzed. So I looked down at my phone, and it's a notification off social media website, Twitter. Now, I get a lot of those. You know, last month I got 3,125 notifications, so I can't pay attention to all of them that I get on a monthly basis, but this one caught my attention because it came from the Community Social Planning Council of Victoria's official account, and it had linked a social media post that I had done earlier. The post that I had done was back on August the 5th. This post was done yesterday, and it fact-checked something that I had written, and I do acknowledge the ambiguity in what I wrote on August the 5th, which is why I subsequently clarified it in other posts as well as clarifying it on these airwaves. But I talked about a fact check for trying to determine the number of persons here in the Victoria area who are homeless and also have arrived within the last year. I did some rough back of the envelope math back when the point in time count was released and everybody was talking about it. The report found that 84% of the homeless persons surveyed in Victoria have been here for more than 1 year. So what I did is I flipped that around and said, well, okay, if 84% have been here for more than a year, we can reasonably suppose that the remainder, 16% of the 1,523 people are new arrivals. So you do the math, it works out to 244 new arrivals. And I pointed out that that's more than are believed to be in Beacon Hill Park with 116 structures. Now, I did draw an adverse inference in one of the parts of data contained in the report. The report says 12% of respondents confirmed that they have been here for less than 1 year. It says 4% of respondents refused to say whether or not they have been here for 1 year or claimed that they didn't know or didn't remember whether or not they have been here 1 year. Now, the controversy about new arrivals requiring increased funds from municipal taxpayers who are already strained is well known in this community. There is debate as to what proportion of homeless people on the street come here from other jurisdictions and impose a burden on our social supports versus how many are, you know, from here. And I don't like that term because it's not entirely precise, but it is the term that you hear commonly used. So what happened was, is the Community Social Planning Council of Greater Victoria, the authors of the point in time count, the experts using the official account, tweeted out a fact check of my statement. And they say the point in time count determined that 12% of 854 survey respondents reported living in the region for less than 1 year. They write, while embedding my tweet on their official account, saying that's 101 new arrivals. Half of those individuals became homeless after moving to Greater Victoria. Well, I have a problem with that fact check, and I acknowledge the ambiguity of what I wrote. What I did is I drew an adverse inference from that 4% that refused to answer the question or claim they didn't remember if they had been here for 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. And I suppose that because saying that you're a newcomer might be seen as a negative thing, because they know that there's a perception of newcomers coming to Victoria and consuming the ample resources that we have, that would be a reasonable suspicion one could form if somebody refused to say whether they've been here a year or not. What I should have written back on August the 5th is that 12% are new arrivals and up to 16% may be new arrivals. That would have been more precise. Again, not necessarily wrong the way I wrote it, but it was imprecise, which is why I corrected it and clarified it. My problem with the fact check, though, is that it's totally wrong. See, the point in time count determined 12% of the survey respondents reported living in the region for less than 1 year. But whoever drafted this statement, I don't think actually read the report. And so I've invited the executive director of the Community Social Planning Council of Greater Victoria to come on the show and talk about the report, talk about my interpretation. I want to ask them about this fact check, because if they wanted to come on the show, there's any number of ways you can get a hold of me. I'll never say no, especially on an issue like this, because I love exploring and talking about these details and trying to figure out what is true. You know, how many people are from elsewhere coming yearly to the Victoria area? Is it 50? Is it 100? Is it 244? Any of those numbers, by the way, would amply fill up the tent city in Centennial Square across the street from us, which means even if we did solve homelessness and everyone had a home, 50 new people could show up in the next year, and we have another tent city on our hands. We need to build or secure other housing, essentially, which means Beacon Hill Park would remain camped, or Centennial Square, or a combination thereof, which was why I wrote about it. But the way that they've written this just isn't correct. So I want to ask the question. I want to give them a chance to explain themselves. And hopefully we can come to some sort of understanding here. So I want to take a quick break. I've invited Diana Gibson, the executive director of the Community Social Planning Council of Greater Victoria, onto the show to talk about this matter. That's coming up next. Stay with us.
It's Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
What will it take for Beacon Hill Park to no longer have people residing in tents within it? What will it take for Centennial Square to no longer have people in tents residing within that square? Well, the mayor of Victoria has been very clear that so long as COVID-19 and the pandemic is on, there is a provision that will be made that will allow people who are homeless to erect tents 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in certain designated parks because they have nowhere else to go. All right, fair enough. She has pitched the solution of writing letters to higher levels of government, specifically the federal government, most recently on these airwaves, calling for more money for housing, saying that that is the only way to actually have these parks cleared. Well, one looks at that and says, all right, if the condition is zero homeless persons in Victoria, what would that actually take? Well, you count the number of homeless people, count the number of homes you need, purchase or otherwise similarly procure those homes, make sure everybody in them, and then boom, we're done. The parks are clear, right? Well, not that simple. One, that assumes everybody who wants a home actually accepts it, and that's not necessarily the case. And two, that does not account for migration in terms of persons who come to Victoria and become homeless or come to Victoria while homeless and would once again have an opportunity to permanently entrench in the parks until COVID-19 was done. This, of course, makes us turn our attention to the point in time count, which is compiled by the Community Council for Social Planning of Greater Victoria, and a fact check that they actually did of me yesterday, which is fine. You know, if I got something wrong, I hope somebody will tell me about it. But I still don't think we've nailed down what the actual number is for migration. So I've invited the executive director of the council to come on the show, Diana Gibson, joining us. Thank you so much for coming on the show today and agreeing. I appreciate it.
Yeah, Adam, it's great to be on the show. This is my first time, so I'm excited.
Oh, right on. Welcome. All right. So let's get started. My phone buzzed yesterday, 8:31 in the morning, and it was your organization, the Community Social Planning Council of Victoria, the Twitter account. You're aware of the Twitter account your organization has, yes?
I am, yeah.
All right. So it's fact-checking a tweet that I wrote back on August the 5th, and I acknowledge that I was not as precise as I should have been in this tweet. I wrote that the point in time count recently determined that 84% of the 1,523 homeless persons here in Victoria have been here for more than 1 year. So I flipped it around. I said that means 16%. 10% of that same number, 1,523 are new arrivals. Do the math, that's 244 new arrivals. I pointed out that that's more than are believed to be in Beacon Hill Park with 116 structures there, you know, as of July the 28th. Your organization tweeted yesterday that the point in time count determined that 12% of 854 survey respondents, a substantially smaller number, reported living in the region for less than 1 year. You then write the number. It says that's 101 new arrivals. Half of those individuals became homeless after moving to Greater Victoria. I want to ask you about that, but first, I've had a couple of people ask me a question about this, and so I wanted to just sort of clear the air and give you an opportunity to address it to make sure there's no appearance of conflict of interest or anything like that. One of the distinguishing features of this report that counted 1,523 homeless persons is only two less than the last time the point in time count was done in 2018. You know that, yes?
Yep.
All right. The 2018 count was coordinated, and the report was written by Together Victoria by-election candidate Stephanie Hardman. You know that, yes?
The 2018 one?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
She was a staffer at the Community Social Planning Council at the time.
Yes. Yeah, that's correct. This report also thanks the same person, Together Victoria by-election candidate Stephanie Hardman, by name on page 31, and it acknowledges her contributions to this report. I've had people ask me if there's still a relationship and what her contributions were to this report that's debating this matter of public importance with the pending by-election. So can you explain to the audience any ongoing connection, if any, and the extent of those contributions?
Yeah, that's a great question. The only meetings we had with Stephanie was with regards to the point in time count methodology, so that we could ensure that the methodologies and approaches were consistent. Also, because we were working with a mostly new staff team, it was just making sure we had access to all of the maps and information and everything. So there was basically what she was doing was transitioning over the project to the new project manager. It was purely technical, methodological, and that's it. She did not have any input on the report drafting or the report.
Okay, and that would be appropriate that those steps were taken, because this report obviously will alter the discourse, and this matter will, I suspect, be material to determining the outcome of the by-election. You can't have somebody writing a report that's going to create favorable conditions for them to win, obviously.
Well, I can't speak to whether or not there's favorable conditions for her to win. I can just speak to, as a former staff person, she handed over files and then spoke to the technical, making sure that we had consistent technical methodology. So I think maybe it would be good to move over back to the data, because I think that is not a concern.
Absolutely. Yeah. This report was delayed for a number of months in respect to its release. Why is that?
It's usually released in July. The fact that it was released right on schedule is quite an accomplishment, given that there was a pandemic in between. So,
was there any element of it delayed, though? Because I was under the impression that the pandemic made it take longer.
No.
Okay.
It's usually released in July. It varies as to when in July, but my understanding is that it was on schedule.
Okay. Your organization has done this public fact-checking, which I find very innovative and very promising. Can you describe for us the protocols that your organization compiled in advance in terms of choosing which persons would be publicly fact-checked, the conditions under which that information would be published, and the due diligence that would be performed before your organization would publish those statements of fact?
I think what I'd like to speak to right now is that we really are, when we put this report out, the point in time count is really about putting a human face on homeless.
Okay, I'm going to ask the question again, Diana Gibson.
I just want to speak to this, though.
I'm going to ask the question again, Diana Gibson. Can you describe the protocols that your organization developed before engaging in your public fact-checking campaign?
I can't speak to protocols. What I can speak to is the objective with the point in time is to put a human face on homelessness. So when we engage in the media around the report, the objective is to work with folks like yourself around ensuring that the data is well informed. So for example, half of the people that were in that category of new to Victoria this year actually lost their housing after being here. They didn't move here homeless,
they
experienced homelessness. They lost their housing after they had lived here and moved here. So, for example, that assumption that we've got this cumulative number of people moving here already in homelessness. So our job as a community-engaged organization around the research is to really support folks like you to use the data in a way that really helps to inform policy. So what our objective is in our public, in things like fact checking, is just to say, hey, let's get into a conversation. I'm so glad we're having this conversation, you and I, because it really is about how can we use this data to best have a conversation to help inform your listeners.
Yes.
And also, influence policymakers. And I think you and I would be on the same page.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Can you tell our audience how many fact checks have been done by your organization so far publicly?
I can't speak to that.
The answer is one.
I have staff.
The answer is one. It's to me and me only.
No, that's not true. There's more. Nope, there's more than one.
I've a fact check. How many more?
So we didn't single. We didn't single you out.
Okay.
And I did try and reach out. I think we're not trying to.
Okay.
I had my staff try and reach out, and that's why we wanted to be on your show. We wanted to talk about this.
So, perfect, great. Let's talk about the numbers then.
That'd be great.
Okay, all right. So let's see. Let's go over. I just want to make sure that the text is here. So your organization tweeted at 8:31 a.m. yesterday to your 2,191 followers. Hashtag fact check. The point in time count determined 12% of 854 survey respondents reported living in the region for less than 1 year. That's 101 new arrivals. Half those individuals became homeless after moving to Greater Victoria. We have hashtag YYJ. This tweet has been liked by the official account of the Our Place Society, endorsing it and potentially rebroadcasting it to that society's 3,190 followers. Now, on page 12 of the report, it says very clearly that the responses were taken from those 854 people who answered the point-in-time homeless needs survey between March 11th and 12th, and it says refer to the technical appendix for the survey questions and data tables, which we did. It says very clearly the number of surveys represents over half of the population enumerated, meaning the results can be considered a good representation to the broader homeless population in the region. I relied on that when applying them to the number 1,523. Why does your fact check omit that material fact?
I apologize for that. Maybe it was done quickly. I think that the important thing in that fact check was really that the assumption that we have people moving here that are already in homelessness in those volumes and that they're consistently replacing the numbers on the street is what we wanted to talk to you about.
Okay, because you've written that's 101 new arrivals. That's an error in your fact check. So we're going to need to address that.
We can only speak to what we've got in the survey data because...
page 12. It says on page 12 it's a good representation of the broader homeless population in the region, not merely the 854 respondents. That's from your own report.
Yeah, and I think, and you're right.
I think the
challenge for us is that the point in time count is about the individual experience and nuance. So what we try to talk about is that, for example, you know, half of those people already came here, didn't come here as homeless people, right?
Yes.
Or people who are already in homelessness. They came here as people that came looking for work or with work and subsequently became homeless or came with family.
Okay. Yeah.
And then subsequently, so maybe a youth that ended up being out of the house because they were not accepted by their family because of sexual orientation or somebody who was in an abusive relationship. So half of those people that's the importance of our survey. The point in time count really is about bringing that personal face to the experience rather than making big assumptions about motivations of people moving here.
So I don't want to get too far off track. I need to address a couple of other things. You've written that's 101 new arrivals. On page 4 of the report, it says that the point in time count should be treated as an underestimate, saying that some individuals value their privacy, prefer not to participate, while others' experience remain hidden. On page 6 of the report, it says the point in time of enumeration is known to be an undercount of the population of the homeless community. On page 11 of the report, it says the survey does not accurately measure hidden homelessness, such as coast surveys, surfing. This is a gross underestimate, but provides important data. All of those things to me suggest the number that you have published as fact, 101 new arrivals, must be an underestimate. So the real number must be higher.
All of our numbers. Yeah.
Yes.
So the thing that's really important for you to contextualize, and I think that it would be great for us to talk about, is 6,000 people were new to Greater Victoria last year.
Yes.
And that's been fairly consistent. So over the past 10 years, that's like plus or minus 50,000 new people. And so what we see is half of those people that were new to Victoria, they came in as those 6,000 people coming into town.
Yes.
And we had, before COVID, we had employers saying they had labor shortages.
Yes.
So what you see is people coming into this community and part of the 6,000. And they're being pushed. And so that 6,000 number is pushing people into homelessness because it's putting so much pressure on our housing market. And the key reason people say they're not being able to access housing from that survey is lack of enough income, lack of affordable housing, and just that there is nowhere to go.
All right.
So that, you know, that housing pressure. So even if you were to close the door and say we didn't have any, even if you said there was no one new to town, we would still have a crisis.
Yes.
And then the other issue that's really important for us to talk about is that about 48% of Canadians are $200 away from bankruptcy before COVID hit.
Yes, so and they're in dire straits now, I know. So I just, I'm almost out of time, but will you correct your error? Because it wasn't 101 new arrivals. You've acknowledged the number is higher than that. In fact, it might even be higher than the 244 that I wrote, because the entire count is an underestimate.
Yes, absolutely. And we
Thank
say
you.
That clearly in
Thank
all
you.
Of our documents. We say it's
not in that tweet, and there is no link from that tweet
and
back to the original document.
We will put in there that half
Thank
of,
you.
We do have a tweet that half of those people were not homeless when they arrived.
Were experienced
homeless after, and 84% already experienced homelessness from being in Victoria, living here, and not being able to afford housing. And that's what we need to address. And I'd love to talk to you more about some of the solutions to that.
Absolutely. And I'm sure we'll do that sometime soon. Diana Gibson, thank you for your time. Take care.
Okay, thank you.
Have a good day. All right, folks, let's take a quick break. Back after the news.
Now, Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
All right. And again, I thank our guest for coming onto the show and clarifying what they meant. But once again, if you're an organization that produces with public money results that must be reliable when policymakers make decisions on matters of public importance, any fact checks that you publish need to be accurate. They need to be complete. Indeed, there are any number of obligations if you go through the grants that are given to this particular organization to produce publicly reliable data. The fact that it was my reputation that was on the line with that inaccurate and, you know, let's say unsatisfactory fact check really is beside the point. It's much more about us being able to have confidence in our public institutions. You know, Government of Canada gives an organization a bunch of money to do something and produce information. That organization needs to be reliable in all matters, not merely sometimes in the report and then maybe not other times in a social media post. But anyway, I'll leave that between them and those who fund the work that that organization does. And I'm sure that appropriate steps will be taken to ensure that we can rely on the point in time count in future, despite this little unfortunate incident. I do want to talk about the North Park Neighborhood Association now, because they want a plan from the city of Victoria to deal with yet another tent encampment in that area. Now, it's been there for a while, at least I've been aware of it for a while, but we're told that there are an increasing number of tents there now. And sadly, the crime and disorder that has been reported in close proximity to other tent encampments previously is also being experienced in this area. I want to welcome to the CFAX Airwaves our guest, Sean Cahill, is a board member with the North Park Neighborhood Association. Welcome to the program. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Describe for us what's happening in your neighborhood.
Well, I think that that you put it quite well. I mean, I don't want to belabor all of the individual outrageous incidents that happened and are happening. But I think you put it quite well when you said, you know, we're looking for a plan here. We do realize that the city can't, you know, wave a magic wand and, you know, end homelessness. But on the other hand,
but we need to clear the parks, because the mayor has been very clear that someone with nowhere else to go will not be displaced during COVID-19. COVID-19 is with us for the moment. So until we achieve perfect ending to homelessness, there will be tents permanently entrenched in parks with COVID-19. Yes?
Yes, absolutely. But
so we need a magic wand and we don't have one. So what are we going to do?
Well, that's exactly the question. So what we need to do is manage the problem. We can't just, like, throw up our hands and say, well, I guess, you know, let the chips fall where they may. What we need is for the city to be proactive and dealing with problems and very predictable problems. So what we're looking for is very simple answers. Or answers to very simple questions like, what would the maximum number of people that would be suitable for Central Park or any other park be? What is the distance between tents and a children's play structure?
Yeah. What is? Are there answers to those questions that we know of?
No. Okay. We've been barraging the city for answers, for a plan, for some criteria by which to judge. Meanwhile, they are moving tenters into Central Park without any sort of metrics regarding, you know, what an appropriate number is for this park, for without any sort of assessment of what other parks are available. In terms of green space, like what the available green space is for a neighborhood.
Yeah.
I mean, what we have here is a neighborhood which is very poor, a lot of families, a lot of immigrant families, living in apartments, and we are very, very green space deficient.
So,
and we've got people camping like right on our doorstep, like taking up the sort of the only park in the neighborhood.
I received a letter recently from a listener who also lives in the neighborhood, describing a situation where a outside table went missing from their property. The gentleman who emailed me, his wife saw it and was looking at the table, and apparently it was near an encampment in a field. I don't know if it was North Park, or excuse me, Central Park specifically, but it was nearby or perhaps in that park. And I had it related to me that the mere act of this woman looking at the table prompted a threat of violence, saying, if that B word keeps staring, I'm going to smack her, was apparently what a gentleman, or, you know, I use that term loosely, what a man who apparently was a camper yelled at this woman. Have you seen anything like that?
Daily. Right outside my door.
Daily.
I live in the neighborhood.
Yes.
I live directly across from the park. There was a man showering buck naked using a camp shower thing. Meters from the children's park.
Really? That's deeply disturbing.
Then that, of course, escalated into a shouting match where, you know, all sorts of threats were made. That person the cops came and told him to move on.
Yes.
And he moved several meters over.
Yes.
And stayed for a week. He was caught breaking into people's houses.
Yeah.
Was still allowed to stay. It was only when it came to violence.
Yes.
That the police were actually felt they were able, they had the mandate, they were able to actually move this person on.
What's it
This is daily, and like the needles and all of that. But again, I don't want to get into suffice it to say, there's a lot of outrageous stuff happening, and that will happen. I mean, when you have an encampment. But what we are looking for is for North Park to be taking on its equitable share of this burden. And in order to take on our equitable share, mm-hmm. there has to be some sort of management. And what the city seems to be doing is just sort of saying, well, you know, we don't have a solution to this. You know, everyone's complaining about their lawn furniture being stolen. So we're just going to, it's all just anecdotal complaints. And we're not going to actively do anything except, curiously, transport people and move them into the park.
I've heard of that happening as well. I was informed of a meeting that took place in your neighborhood recently. I'm not sure if you were in attendance. I was told that councillors Marion Alto and Shermarky Dubo were in attendance, though. A number of very concerning stories relayed. I was told there were people in tears pleading for some sort of help and that little was given. Do you have any knowledge of that?
I wasn't actually able to attend that meeting. I was out on vacationing with my family, but
okay.
But yes, that is what happened. We have been trying to follow up with Marianne. She had some action items she was going to get back to us on. Our emails to her have not been responded to.
Okay.
We still don't have any action items. Basically, there is no plan. And no one's willing to say there is no plan when asked for plan criteria, action items, anything of substance. Basically, you know, crickets. We get nothing.
Sean, I sense a lot of fear in your voice. I don't want you to be afraid. What can we do to help?
Well, I guess, I mean, anything we can do to just get people to communicate,
okay.
get the city to communicate.
Marianne Alto is a regular listener to the show. Councillor Alto, if you're out there listening, if you could please return the email that Mr. Cahill and others sent. I think that would go a long way to reassuring them in this situation. Does that help?
Yeah, that's great. And the rest of council, we need a plan. Like, we're not looking to be NIMBYs here.
No.
We're not expecting magic wands, but we need a plan, and we need communication.
We have been informed that one of the phenomena, and again, this is not necessarily representative of the entire homeless population. I want to be clear. I don't want to paint anyone with an overly broad brush here. But we have been told that there is a significant element of the homeless population who are people who are in BC because they have non-returnable warrants in other jurisdictions. So they're literally criminals fleeing the law. Police identify them, but the warrant is non-returnable, so they're not able to actually compel that person to attend wherever the warrant was issued from, nor can they arrest that person. They merely have to let them stay on the street. Because of this, I have been privately told by some people that I will choose not to name that an extra degree of vigilance and caution must always be exercised, because these are not novice people. These are hardened criminals who, quite frankly, would make short work of a guy like me who talks for a living instead of using my fists or knives to solve problems. I would suspect that you and your neighbors have been advised of the same. So what do you do in this situation to keep everybody safe?
Well, unfortunately, what's happening is that people are simply not showing up at the park.
Yeah.
I mean, they just avoid it. And in these times when there's fewer options for getting around, and people are working from home, and you know, the children just are not going to the park anymore.
Uh-huh.
We used to have a large number of ladies from our mosque across the street.
Yeah.
used to show up. And they'd have picnics and and all that, and they're simply not showing up for their own. Like, no one feels able to use that space. Well, I shouldn't say no one, but it's very, like, the number of campers far outnumber the number of residents that are in that park. When that sort of ratio tips, I mean, people do feel a certain amount of safety in numbers. You know, if one of these, screaming rants turns into problems, the other residents and other campers will step in. But this is the sort of thing where, you know, once things start tipping, and we're getting a lot of growth. Like, the trajectory of this is growth.
Yeah, it is.
And unless something happens to manage the situation, I mean, the results are predictable. We get fewer people in the park, and also we've sort of neglected the effect on the campers here.
Yeah,
well, they're not being supported.
And a lot of them are good folks. They're just down on their luck. They're desperately trying to get by. I've had stories of seniors on the street, parents on the street with kids desperately trying to find a place for their kids. Imagine how cruel it is to force them into these tent cities with hardened criminals right next door. That's sickening that we're doing that, and yet we are.
Yes, I mean, they definitely need more support.
They need help. They need shelter.
It's also a question of density.
Yeah.
And in order for that to happen in a sensible way, in an organized society like we are, someone needs to make a plan. Someone needs to actually take the reins and do something. Because if things are just allowed to, you know, evolve naturally,
mm-hmm.
there, you know, we've seen it again and again. There are very, very predictable results. We need to help the people who are camping, and like you say, the vast majority of them
are just good folks who need help. Yeah, absolutely. Sean Cahill, thanks for coming on the show. I know this is difficult for you, but I think that you're going to give a great deal of comfort and reassurance to others in the city who might think that it's only them. And I'm hoping that by realizing that this is a shared hardship, that can both be therapeutic for you and others, and also urge our public officials to, quite frankly, fulfill their obligations. They invited these folks. They rang the bell. They declared that tent cities would be the way that this issue was handled. For them not to have a plan to manage the entirely expected consequences of the policy choice that was made is, in my view, utterly unacceptable. So we're going to keep covering this until they do a better job. Is there anything else you'd like to leave with our audience today?
No, just that there's they need to be proactive in this, not just reactive. I mean, there has been some reactive, like toilets. Yes. Like, we know that these people are going to need to go to the toilet.
Of course.
Now, what was happening is that people were just pooping in people's yards, and city staff was telling them, I'm sorry, it's not in the park. Therefore, with no PPE or anything like that, it's up to you to take care of it. This is just an example of the sort of place where we could have like been a little bit proactive on that and not reactive.
Yeah.
And we need a plan. We need criteria, and we need someone to take the reins on it.
Well, I don't want to be overly cynical, but you know, I've heard some people suggest that if you want to get away from these tent cities, you just have to move to Fernwood because there seems to be some sort of invisible force there that prevents camps from popping up. I don't know what it is. It's like the backwards Bermuda Triangle, but it seems to be a safe place for whatever reason.
Yeah, well, it's a question of a lack of arbitrary criteria and a lack of criteria. There are certain parks that are no-goes.
Yeah.
That camping is not allowed.
Yep, that's true.
But not all. But parks have not been, as a whole, assessed. So if some group manages to get their park assessed, basically, then it becomes like zero camping anywhere.
Yeah.
And then if your park has not been assessed, it's however many people you can cram in there, no social distancing, whatever goes.
All right. Sean Cahill, I'm sorry this is happening to you and your neighbors. We'll keep on the story, and the city officials will just have to do what they do. Council doesn't meet today. In fact, I don't think they meet until September, do they?
No, but there's still things that they can do.
Yeah.
I mean, just instructions to staff. I mean, if they instructed staff to do things that are within the scope of their jobs, a lot of these problems could be alleviated.
Oh, I mean, we can't. I hear a police siren. You might want to go check that out, Sean. Stay safe, all right?
All right.
Have a good day.
Yeah, thanks. You
at
too.
At least
bye.
As good as can be had. Have a good day. Bye now. Yep. Police siren in the end. Because we're all trapped in a sitcom. All right, quick break. Let's go to open lines after this.
You're listening to Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
All right. I got a lot of interesting text messages during the first segment we had with the executive director of the Community Social Planning Council of Victoria. None of them overly kind to the guest. Many of them very kind to me, though. Thank you very much. Listen, I wasn't trying to beat anybody up. It's just they've got an inaccurate fact check on their Twitter account that targets me. I've been threatened by the homeless campers in Beacon Hill Park about my coverage of this matter. Subsequent to the threat, somebody shot bullet holes with an air gun in our window downstairs. My life is at risk, potentially, if there's information and misinformation out there targeting me, justifying potential attacks against me. I have to take it extremely seriously for the safety of myself, my colleagues, my family. So I'm hoping that they do the right thing and correct that misinformation that they have. They get a lot of public money to produce reliable information, and quite frankly, I think we all deserve better from them. So we'll see how that gets fixed. Somebody else texted me. Not sure how city council, employees, and the mayor can sit back and listen to these stories of problems in the park. Well, it's more than one park now, Ryan. And think they are actually doing a good job. I'm embarrassed for anyone that works under the leadership of this mayor. Oh, which reminds me, actually. I have sought comment from the city of Victoria earlier today because I've had a source inform me inform me of a change to protocols in Beacon Hill Park, but I don't want to report that information until I give the city a chance to either corroborate it or refute it. If you can get back to me, that'd be great. Thank you. Let's see, somebody else texting. My 2-year-old son used to love running through Beacon Hill Park chasing the ducks. He's 3.5 now. And because of his pleading, I thought that we would just go for a few minutes. As we drove up to the park, I could not believe what it looks like with all the campers. They're everywhere, a texter writes. They're not confined to a certain area. It was so bad, a texter writes, that I decided to carry a knife with me in my pocket as we spent 5 minutes looking at ducks because that's as safe as I felt I could be there. When we walked across the lawn from the petting zoo, there were campers basically hiding behind bushes, flowers. It was crazy. What is going on? Or what is it going to take, a texter writes, for this council to do something? The texter writes, we won't be going back there probably ever. It's way too unsafe. I'm sorry that happened, you texter. Again, carrying around a knife for self-defense is technically carrying a weapon dangerous to the public purpose. You're not supposed to do that, but It's self-help, and it's what I've been worried about the whole time. We're starting to see it, so it is what it is. Let's go to Chris, who's waiting on open lines. Hey, Chris, welcome to the program. How you doing?
Not too bad. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome. Go ahead.
Listen, let me tell you a story the other day. It had nothing to do with homelessness.
Yeah?
The society of this world is an absolute joke. I took my kids crabbing the other day, so we're at the dock. Uh-huh. I dropped the crab traps out there, and I see this boat approach one of my traps, and then it approached another one of my traps. So I'm like, get in. Somebody's looks like they're taking our traps. Uh-huh. So I ripped over there. They're on top of our two floats, so they kind of drove away. I pulled the two traps. They're empty. Our third one was absolutely chock-a-block full. All right, so it's kind of like the one little guy, my son's friend's like, oh, did those guys steal our crabs? And so that kind of looks like it, eh, buddy? So we go back to the dock.
Yeah.
I'm at the boat. My boys are running around. They had some shrimp traps out.
Yeah.
My son, who's literally 60 pounds soaking wet, comes back to me with tears in his eyes. I'm like, what's wrong, buddy?
Wow.
He's like, those guys are going to beat us up. And he's blubbering. I'm like, what? And they came at us, and they said, go get your dad. Go get your dad. So I'm like, what? And then the other kid, his son's like, yeah, I thought they jumped on us. They came up out of the boat. And they cornered us at the... So anyway, so I go at him, being an angry dad.
Mm-hmm.
And started, and I'm like, so who's the tough guy who likes to beat on little kids?
Yeah.
Right? So one of the guys proceeds to say, well, you're explicit kid. So I said, what'd you say? And I turned toward... I took about five steps towards him. The guy tackled me. Football tackles me. So this scuffle ensues.
Yeah.
I had him pinned to the ground. He was a small guy. Like, I didn't throw any punches. But this guy was, like, trying his might. He almost fell into the water, and I grabbed him.
Yeah.
Threw him back down on the dock. I'm pinning him down. In the meantime, his other buddies is watching this. Then he starts tying a chain around my leg.
So on the dock.
At his buddy, I'm like, on the dock. My kid's watching this. I said, you better grab this guy before stuff starts going bad. Like, it's not going to be good for this. Like, it was kind of like me wrestling with my little kid, like me beating on this man. So all I did was just enough to subdue this guy to stop him from, you know, assaulting me. So on the way home, there's this roadblock.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I bet you that's for us. So, yeah, sure enough, they're like, Chris, we're detaining you for assault and impaired driving.
And impaired driving?
Impaired driving. So he's like, we're going to talk to you, and then I'm going to get you to do a breathalyzer. I'm like, okay, sounds good. So yeah. I said, tell you the truth, I haven't drank in probably 3 years. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't drink, I don't blah, blah, blah. So I tell him what happens. And I said, you know what, there's cameras there to show that these guys verbally assaulted my kids to the point of them being terrified. And I said, I did nothing different to these guys than what they did to my kids. I went and confronted them, yelled at them, and basically told them they're a bunch of idiots for scaring kids. Right? So these cops are saying I'm detained, and he starts reading my rights and says I need a lawyer, and do I want one present, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, no. No, I said I did nothing wrong. Check the video. So they sent another officer there to watch the video.
Yeah.
And they're like, yep, you're all right. You're good to go. What you said exactly happened. I said, so in the meantime, I'm going to get charged for assault and impaired driving because these two clowns, right, just make up the story. But thank God there's video there.
Well, it sounds like those two clowns filed a false police report, Chris. I hope they don't face criminal charges for that because that is an offense.
So then I turn around to the cop and I said, so... Technically, these guys did exactly what I did, yelled and screamed at kids. I said, I turned around, yelled and screamed at them. I'm almost a 50-year-old man. These guys are like 35. I said, can I charge them for assault? Ha, ha, ha. You better watch it because the one guy has mental issues. We just gave him a warning. I said, so in the meantime, you're going to arrest me in front of my kid for an assault that took place by this guy with mental issues. And I'm the one who has to get a lawyer and prove that I did nothing wrong.
And he gets to walk away. I see what you're
saying.
And
he walks. Yeah, this guy was, so if you say you got mental issues, I guess you can assault dads on the dock with their kids. You know what I mean? Like it's an
I hear you. There's got to be a different balance.
In the meantime, my kid's traumatized for A being pulled over. His buddy's traumatized for what happened on the dock. And then I'm parked on the side of the road. I see this clown drive by laughing. He's thinking he's got away scot-free. And in the meantime, and then I'm in my company truck. People are seeing me in my company truck pulled over by all these police.
Yeah, it's not a good look. I got to run. I'm out of time, Chris, but I'm sorry that happened. But I'm glad the police officers exercised their professional discretion, reviewed the evidence, and did not move forward with a charge recommendation.
What happens if there wasn't video, though?
That's the thing, right? So, I'm glad there was, but I'm sorry that happened at all, Chris.
Ha, ha, ha. He's got mental issues. Safe to go. Carry on. Set up a tent city. Like, it's a joke. An absolute joke. Anyways, you have a good day.
Yeah, you too. Take care.
Bye.
That's very troubling. All right, quick break. We'll go to the newsroom. Open lines continue after the news. BJ, you'll be up next, then Ian, then Gary, then Gordon.